Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Education Talk Radio today, January 10th, 2012. I got that right again. It is 2012. I haven't made the mistake yet. It's not 2011. It's 2012. And I'm Larry Jacobs, and I'm thrilled you're with us today. And, of course, I want you to know that this show will be archived immediately after at our website, which is www.education-talkradio.org. And you can go over there and to see all of our scheduled shows, plus all the shows that we have done. And, of course, this week's shows are right down the middle of the page, archived as soon as they are done. And we have a great show for you today. So if you have to leave it halfway through, you'll be able to hear it whenever you want over at the website, education-talkradio.org. Today, our guest, and I'm going to bring him on in just a second, will be calling from New Hampshire. And when we planned the show, okay, we didn't realize it was the day of the New Hampshire primary, 2012. I'm going to ask Ralph about that. Ralph Fletcher will be our guest. He'll be talking about teaching writing and his new book from Heinemann, et cetera. And I want to thank the folks at Heinemann for bringing Ralph to my attention. And I do want to say this about Heinemann, which is a wonderful organization, by the way, also located coincidentally in New Hampshire. Heinemann offers proven reliable resources for today's instructional challenges. They're really good by some of the world's best education thought leaders, Fountas and Pinnell, Lucy Calkins, Harvey, Smokey Daniels. Some of these have been on the show. And, of course, our guest today, Ralph Fletcher. Heinemann's resources for leveled literacy intervention, benchmark assessment, classroom materials, professional books, professional development services, literally, and they do, they transform teaching and lead to great and powerful learning. For the best in educational publishing and professional development, please go over and visit Heinemann.com today to learn more. That's Heinemann, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N, two N's, okay, H-E-I-N-E-M-A-N-N.com, because Heinemann is dedicated to teachers, dedicated to education. So thank them, Heinemann, for bringing this guy, the one and only Ralph Fletcher, to my attention. Hi, Ralph.
Hi, Larry. How are you?
I'm fine. Did you vote yet today?
You know, I decided to wait until a little bit later, but I'm looking forward to it. I'm just a little bit concerned. I might run into, three or four candidates on the way to the polls.
Don't be concerned. You will. It's a small state. One of the joys of New Hampshire is that you do actually get to meet all these people close up, and if you want to, have a conversation with them, including the state people, as well as when the nationals come through for the primaries. It's fun. It's a good place. So why don't you tell folks where you are, Ralph, in New Hampshire?
I live in Lee, which is just a hair away from Durham, where the University of New Hampshire is. It's kind of the seacoast area of New Hampshire. It's about 20 minutes from Portsmouth. So it's a nice part of the state.
And is there a better place on the face of the earth?
Well, it's one of the best. It really is.
It is.
About an hour and 15 from Boston, an hour from the White Mountains, and about 30 minutes from the beaches. So you can't complain.
If people haven't been to New Hampshire or don't understand how wonderful it is, I raised my kids there. It is a great place. And obviously, Heinemann, our sponsor today, who you publish for, they're in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, a great town. You're up in Lee, and it's good to have you with us, Ralph. I've been looking forward to this show.
I'm looking forward to it also. Thank you.
Now, talk to me for a second. You have a new book out, okay, from Heinemann, and I'm just going to start there. It's called Mentor, Author, comma, Mentor Texts. And why don't you tell me what that means?
Well, nowadays when we teach writing to kids, we're looking for ways to show them how writing works. And, you know, writing is not just one skill. It's a whole bundle of skills. So one of the ways we do that is we try to give kids models, examples, something that they can look to improve their writing.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Go ahead. Yeah.
So I was going to say that one of the things that I think of, you know, you can't write in a vacuum. You have to have some image of what writing looks like. So many teachers around the country are using mentor text in the forms of wonderful picture books or poems to give kids an image of what their writing could look like and really to help lift the quality of student writing in the classroom.
So a mentor text is basically something that's already been written that allows the student to learn from that and move in that direction. Am I correct?
Yes, and I think that the whole idea of mentorship is an interesting one and kind of a complicated one. I mean, we, you know, those people that we kind of look up to, whether it's somebody who teaches us how to sail or anything, you know, you watch them, you watch what they do, and hopefully you can pick up some tips, not just in terms of, like, the craft of what they're doing it, but almost their spirit and their whole demeanor about doing it. So it's a process that takes a long time. It's not quick. It's not a quick fix thing.
And I want people to know a little bit more about you, which I meant to ask you first. Why don't you tell folks a little bit about your background in writing for teachers, et cetera, and writing for young adults. I want to say that, too.
Sure.
Because you're not coming out of a vacuum. You're not Mr. Bean of writing. You didn't just land on the planet and came up with this idea. I know for a fact that you've been doing this a long time.
Right. A lot of people in my field are teachers who learn a lot about writing. I kind of come in the door from the opposite way. I am a writer who learned a lot about teaching. So I've written a lot of books, various kinds of books, both for young writers and for writing teachers. So I can, you know, kind of look at the other side of the desk. I can see the side of the desk of
right.
working with the students about their writing, but also kind of what it looks like to create the text itself.
I think it's really good stuff, and I know that you – and how many books have you published now?
I've published about 50 books. And I also, you know, when I got out of college, I was a freelance writer for a while. I've written a whole bunch of nonfiction, just kind of articles for various magazines, Wall Street Journal, People Magazine. So I kind of have that background. I have a degree in writing from, well, two degrees, one from Dartmouth and one from Columbia University. And,
oh, wow.
I love to write. Basically, it's not one of these things that's sort of a drudgery thing. I look up every day. I wake up looking forward to writing, and it's even funny, you know, Larry. Over the holidays, you know, as you know, we have lots of relatives and friends, and I love that. But I also lose my writing days. It kind of makes me feel kind of ornery sometimes.
Well, the joy of the holidays. Unfortunately, I do go through the same thing here. You're having such a good time at the holiday, and you start to lose track of what the things that you need to do, and you have to kind of restart yourself and all that. You know, you said something interesting, and I want to say two things. When you say writing, what do you consider to be writing? And I know that might be a crazy question, but let me put it in today's terms. Do you consider an email writing? Do you consider texting writing? Or is writing a narrative? How do you consider it? And then I want to get it back into your book and start that by asking what grades is it appropriate for? So one or the other.
Yeah, okay, I'll start with the question about writing. I think writing is all those things that you mentioned. It has to do with, you know, making writing a text or an email. And I think that sometimes when we talk about writing, the kind of writing I'm talking about in schools, I think there's a danger of dismissing it as creative writing. And in fact, I think that I'm talking about all kinds of writing that kids are going to need for their lives in school and
mm-hmm.
beyond that. So it's not just I'm not just talking about story writing. Although I do think that story writing is a good place to start, but it's not certainly not the be all and the end all.
It isn't. And actually, what you just said a minute ago, it makes perfect sense, because in this day and age, so much of business depends on, and politics, which is perfect for today, considering the date of the New Hampshire primary where you're located. You know, to Twittering and all that sort of stuff. Okay, matters in the world these kids are growing up with. And if they don't learn to do that right, they're going to be behind the eight ball as well. So writing, and I agree with you wholeheartedly, writing is the act of writing something.
That's right. I always say that writing is a matter of putting particular words in a particular order to create the effect that you want. And when you can teach someone to do that well, you give them a powerful tool that nobody can take away from them.
It's true. It's true, Ralph. Now, your new book, Mentor Author, Mentor Texts, Ralph Fletcher is our guest today. I'll read the subtitle, Short Texts, Craft Notes, and Practical Classroom Uses. What grades are you what grade teachers are you looking at?
Probably this is a book that probably is most applicable for grades, I'd say grade 3 through grade 8, around there, that range.
Kind of the middle school range, mid-level education.
Yeah, I'd say upper elementary and middle school. Frankly, I think that high school teachers could use as well, but to be really, the sweet spot is probably grades 3 through 8.
Okay, very good. Now, are mentor texts something new, or have they been using them for years?
Well, they've been around for a while. It's probably not a new idea that we share models for kids. And in fact, Larry, sometimes we've heard these texts referred to as anchor texts, which I kind of I kind of worry about that because it sounds like something that would weigh kids down. My image of mental checks is something that would kind of like buoy kids up and kind of lift them. That's the whole idea of inspiration, you know. But one thing that we realize is that you can't do anything in a vacuum. You can't create in a vacuum. And if you look at any writer or look at readers, I would say it's true that not all readers are writers, but it's almost always true that good writers are readers. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I
do. There are
a
lot of readers out there that don't decide to go ahead and write something, but if you look at somebody who writes well, whether it's a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old or a 50-year-old, there are people who read. And you see that. It's so obvious in the classroom, by the way. It becomes obvious right away that the best writers are students who have been read to, who read, who love books, and you can tell they have that language that's alive inside them. And when they have the opportunity to write, all that richness spills out of them onto the paper.
Okay, so I want you, do you have your book in front of you?
I do.
Okay, the book, again, I just want to keep saying it so people know. Mentor Author, Mentor Texts, Ralph Fletcher's our guest, available from Heinemann Publishing. Okay, I want you to pick something out of your book, okay? I have a copy of your book here. But I want you to just read, pretend you're a teacher, and read that to me, and then tell me the next step with if you're a teacher.
All right.
Does that make sense? In other words,
sure.
Well, let me hear the practicality of it.
Yeah, so I'm going to just pick out a poem that I wrote. It's one of the earlier pieces. It's called The Family Plot.
Okay.
It goes like this.
And you wrote this? You wrote this.
Yes, these are all texts, by the way, that I wrote myself. So
oh,
there's
okay,
24
cool.
of them in the book. So that's, maybe we can talk about that in a bit also.
Sure.
But this is called The Family Plot. Whenever we go visit Grandma and Grandpa, we always have to visit a certain old cemetery. Dad slowly steers the car past the granite gravestones while me and my brother crack jokes from the back seat. The family plot is on a hill overlooking a stone wall. Nice view, my brother says. Good drainage, I put in. Dad turns to stare at us hard. Grandpa says, I'll be buried right next to my sweetheart, and Grandma smiles at him. There's room for us all, Mom says, and the cheery way she says it makes it sound like we'll be camping underneath the stars. So, you know, basically it's one of these scenes where you've got three generations. You've got the grandparents, you've got the parents, and the poem is really being narrated by one of the brothers, one of the two brothers
right.
who are in the car. So to follow up on your question, like, where do you go from here?
Yeah, all right, you're a teacher, you just read
right.
that, which is adorable, by the way. Okay, so you just read that. Now what?
Well, what I would do is, first of all, it's great to make copies of the poem, Xerox it or print it out. And there's, by the way, there are files that you can, when you get the book, you get them online, so you can just easily print this out. But then to encourage the kids to read it again, I would read it out loud for the class. And I think students need to hear a piece of writing read well. Also, the book gives a link that allows students to hear me reading this piece aloud. So that's interesting to hear the author reading it out loud.
That's pretty clever.
And then what I would do
is
I'd get kids in small groups and just get them talking about what do they notice, what strikes them, what do they like. I think that sometimes we make the mistake, and I've done this too, of kind of quickly pointing out some element of craft or something, some strategy the writer's using. But I think kids' most immediate thing is just to respond to the whole thing, you know, just to talk about who would ever think about writing a poem about going to a cemetery or, well, this poem doesn't rhyme, you know, whatever they have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I follow. In the book, I follow each text with something I call writer's notes, and this is about a page, or sometimes a half a page, or even a little bit more. But basically, I try to unpack the piece, and I try to tell the students what I was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, what I do, for example, and I point out a few things. For example, you know, I know Larry, your audience is probably consists of a lot of teachers, and so
it does.
I would say that, for example, in one of the stanzas. It says, "While me and my brother," that's the second stanza, "while me and my brother crack jokes from the back seat." Well, every English teacher is going to hear that and hear the grammatical error there. You know, you really should read, "while my brother and I." And I talk about it in the writer's notes.
I'm embarrassed. I didn't even notice.
Yeah. Well, I deliberately did it that way because I thought that it sounded more true to a student's voice, to a kid's voice. I thought that that's probably the way kids would say it. They may, they, you know, it's not grammatically correct, but sometimes as a writer, you deliberately make a grammatical error in the spirit of making it authentic and sounding like, you know, the way kids really talk. So that's one thing I point out in the writer's notes. I also point out that I think in a good piece of writing there's a little bit of tension, and part of what I think makes this poem interesting is you've got the three different points of view. You know, everybody's got a little agenda. Graham and Grandpa are looking at this place as kind of like in a nostalgic way, like we're going to end up resting here, and the parents are trying to make this a nice family outing, and the two brothers think this is just bizarre beyond belief. So, and I want to just say something about the writer's notes, Larry, that I think it's important when you have a mentor text that you really, I think talk is important, that you give students a lot of time to make sense by using their own talk and what they notice and really honoring that. So when I wrote these writer's notes, I didn't want to supplant their own thinking or be a, or have this be played as a trump card, like here's the real
right.
answer. Rather, I just wanted to be another part of the conversation, like an important part. Let's hear what the author has to say. But ultimately, each student has to make sense about the piece, and every student will take away what he or she wants. It's not necessarily the same thing.
Now, I want to ask this, and I'm not a teacher of English. I never was. I was a teacher of social studies. Okay.
Okay.
But
yeah.
I want to take this a little step further. Okay. Now, I would assume that a good exercise after this. I'm going to rephrase that. What's the good exercise after we talk about this and get the kids' points of view and what it means? What would you do with the kids next?
Well, here's the thing. I come out of a model of, I mean, I really believe in writing workshop, which has a lot of choice. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
like one of the basic things. So kids, unlike the way I was taught to write, by the way, Larry, you know, where I didn't have much choice at all. I was assigned things, you know, write about
yourself.
We must
have the same teacher. We must have the same teacher.
Well, so the writing workshop model is something that really we give students choice on what they want to write about as much as possible. And we give them regular
mm-hmm.
time to write. So I think in a good classroom, the teacher is bringing forth lots of rich mentor texts as models for kids. And one of the questions that he or she is asking those students is, like, after they discuss this piece, is this author doing something that really strikes you that maybe you'd like to do in your own writing?
Mm-hmm.
So this piece could be used in a unit that you're studying poetry as a class, maybe the students
mm-hmm.
are all writing poetry, but it's also got stuff that I think that, you know, can be germane to any kind of writing. So, I mean, I think that in some ways you could make the argument that a good writing classroom can only be as strong as the reading, the literature that surrounds and supports and buoys up the writing. So I think good teachers are always bringing in, you know, good pieces of writing. And you want to also encourage that talk about writing. You know, what is good writing?
Yeah, you're opening up all kinds of things for me here, okay? This is going to be one of the nuttier questions you have ever had. Is talking about writing, does it make them better writers? Which is kind of a stupid question. It's not the question I really want to ask. Okay, does talking about writing, is that a substitute for writing?
Well,
I don't know how to phrase that, but I'm trying to get to something here.
Well,
I hope it's not that stupid a question.
It's not a stupid question at all, and it's actually I like the question because it's making me think. I just think, like what I said earlier, is that in good writing classrooms, there's this talk about what makes good writing. That's all, and it's the teacher's talking about it, and the teacher is sharing. By the way, this is not exactly answering your question, but I want to point out that
it's all right.
Teaching is quite isolating in some ways.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a friend of mine likes to quip that when he took a job in a school, the principal said, "Welcome to our school. Here's your room. I'll see you again in 30 years."
There, kick.
And the idea is, you know, that that's the way a lot of times teaching has been. We kind of go into our room, we shut the door.
Yeah.
One of the things that's nice about mentor text is it can be kind of like a co-teacher in the classroom. It gives the kids another voice to learn from, not just your voice teaching kids about writing, but now we have a voice of, you know, Jane Yolen or Cynthia Ryland or Christopher Paul Curtis or, you know, Jack London or somebody another person whose words are infused in the classroom. So That's part of the conversation. Now, to go back to your question, you know, I think that, let's just say a teacher wants, you know, writing is very mysterious in a way. You know, we read, and good writing teachers find a way to put language to it. What we talk about, for example, leads. A strong piece of writing has a lead that grabs the reader.
Like it was a dark and stormy night?
Well, yeah, could be. Or, you know, there's millions of them, you know. You know, Call Me Ishmael, right? Moby Dick. But the point is that in a classroom of fourth graders or eighth graders, you might decide to attune kids to that. You might say, you know, this year, boys and girls, we're going to be looking at how writers grab the reader with that with strong leads. And we're going to be reading all kinds of leads. I'm going to be bringing some in. Maybe you guys can be looking also. And let's talk about what makes this lead something that we want to keep reading. Why does it make us want to keep reading the piece? So I think that conversation is important. And, you know, I've noticed, by the way, that in a classroom, sometimes kids only do the most superficial part of the conversation. They may, in other words, they may just try on the trappings of the language.
Uh-huh.
But I think that over time, it soaks into them what it really means, you know, what good writing is, what is a good lead. You know, at first they may just be borrowing that term, but I think that's the way we learn also. We just basically try out, and it takes us a while to really inhabit the idea in a deep way.
And, By the way, I'm looking.
You go ahead. I noticed that a lot of my metaphors, I think metaphorically, and a lot of my metaphors have to do with food, especially around lunchtime. You appreciate that. I think that a lot of this has to do with, you know, what kids pick up from a mentor text. It may be something really small. You know, kids may notice that the author used a dot, dot, dot in a piece of writing,
mm-hmm.
you know, an ellipse. Or they may see a word used in an unusual way. Or they may notice, like, a one-sentence paragraph and think, gee, I never thought of that before. Or they may notice something bigger and more complicated. And I was going to draw an example from the culinary world. You know, traditionally, chefs, like chefs of the best restaurants in the United States, chefs get sent to Europe to eat for 6 months. I always wonder, by the way, where can I sign up for this job, right?
Yes, exactly.
But they go
and they come back as air cargo.
Well, right, that's true, but they get to try different restaurants, and they notice different spices. And what they're doing is they're getting a vision, a sense of the possibilities that are out there, you know, with food. And I think in the same way, when young writers delve into mentor text, they get a wider sense of what's possible to create when they write themselves.
You know, that brings up an interesting point. It brings up the point about the Nooks and Kindles, okay? I know you're going to let me just lead into this. When people are, you know, and I do agree, you learn from mentor text, and mentor text can be any book. But if you don't get a chance to go into the library and see the vast array that's there, or into the bookstore and see the vast array that's there, if you're just selecting what you think you want without looking at the rest of it, okay, do you think that's going to hurt writing in the long run? We're narrowing down choice, whether we like to say that or not, although the full choice is there, it's not in front of your eyeballs anymore.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing. It's certainly changing, Larry.
Call me a Luddite, by the way, if you want, by the way, Ralph. You can welcome to do that.
No. I'm probably, unfortunately, I'm not even proud of this, but I probably lean that way myself a little bit. I mean, for example, here's what I notice. If somebody gives you the New York Times and you look at an article, right, you often notice what's peripheral next to it. Look at this article up here. You know, you see kind of the range of things around it. You know, you might read something, for example, about Santorum, but there's also an article about Ron Paul or about Romney, whatever.
Right.
Whereas if somebody sends you the link, you will only get that article.
Great point. Great analogy.
And that's what you're sort of saying, that it's more focused. And I guess the thing is, I'm trying to embrace the idea that it's not maybe worse or whatever. It's just different. It is different, though. You're right. It's a different paradigm.
It is, and it allows that. I mean, there's so many good things about it, but I danger, Will Robinson, danger. I just see a problem coming down the pike, you know, because I agree with you that if you can't observe all these different ways of doing it and seeing what you're trying to do in your book, you're losing a little bit. That's why I like the way your book is laid out. I have to ask you that question. You laid out the book. This is really interesting to me, and I'll give you the – I want people to just understand it. The family plot and your note is about having a different point of view. That's what that's about. okay? Notes on a thing called Quilt, playing with ways to stitch together sentences, a little pun there, using an extended metaphor. I'm just going to run down these things that your writing was about in the book. Trying to capture an awkward moment, developing a character by describing one physical attribute, in that case you use somebody's hands. We can go right down the list of using personification, showing emotion through movement and action. And how did you select those? How did you select those very topics in there?
Well,
what's the organization? Tell me your thoughts on the organization.
The sequence isn't exactly important in terms of how one is next to the other. But I will say this, that what I did was the pieces at the beginning of the book are fairly short and they're easy to read. And as the book goes on, the pieces become more challenging. And some of them are pretty serious. For example, there's a piece called On the Back of the Bus. It's about a racial incident that I observed. And it's a fairly sophisticated and sort of a challenging piece. So what I did was I wanted to give a range of material. I wanted kids to find some of the pieces early that they would read to themselves and they'd say, oh, yeah, I can see what he's doing here, and I might even borrow that myself. So I wanted it to be kind of inviting. But then also, as the book goes on, I wanted to include what I call stretch pieces that are longer and more demanding. And I think part of it, Larry, is that this reflects the realities of school. I mean, as kids move, you know, from elementary school into middle and high school and hopefully college, there's no doubt that the texts that they encounter become more and more sophisticated, you know. And that's part of what – but I think that, you know, one of my suppositions in this book is that they certainly can read from those kind of books also.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, even the more advanced text, there's something they can pull from it. So I wanted to have a range of the books. So some of the pieces toward the end are more challenging. And by the way, I also include in the piece, I wanted to sort of give the kids an inside view over my writing process so they could kind of look over my shoulder. So, for example, I show the kids how I wrote various drafts of the same piece. And it's really interesting about, for example, I wrote a picture book called Hello, Harvest Moon, and I showed the kids the whole process. Here are my notebook scribblings on the idea. Here are some suggestions from my editor. Here's a first draft. Here's some more suggestions. Here's my second draft. And even some samples of what the dummy of the book looks like, so the kids can sort of see the kind of the magic
process.
Steps. Yeah, the process.
Yeah.
I think, you know what it is? You know, going back to what you said about reading and about the way people look at things, I think a lot of students go into the library and they just look at these books that are there. I'm talking about a school library. And they almost imagine these books get hatched out of the sky. You know, it's like, you know, they just
You're
appear.
You're right. You're right.
And I want to sort of give them the idea that, you know, writers are people who make decisions just like they do. And so, you know, that I'm deciding this, I'm trying to think of my title, I'm thinking I might try this word. So I want to sort of let them peer behind the curtain so they can sort of see that. I think it's important because I think that once they realize that, it changes the way they themselves write too.
Well, I think what you're doing is just great. I want to say the name of the book again. Mentor Author, Mentor Texts. Ralph Fletcher, our guest today, is the author. The subtitle is Short Texts, Craft Notes, and Practical Classroom Uses. It's a book published by Heinemann, okay, who brought Ralph to my attention. I thank them for that. What else do people need to know about the book, Ralph, as we wind down?
Well, the one thing is I would say is that it's just my hope that the mentor text in this book could I think of them as stepping stones so that students can stand upon them to create their own writing. And I'm hoping that, you know, like, for example, I try to include a lot of nonfiction. One of the things that I'm sure some of your guests have been talking about are the new Common Core standards. And one of the things that they're looking closely at.
Oh, really? There's new Common Core standards? I had no idea. Really?
it's a big buzzword in education now,
it
especially
is.
In the writing reading world. And one of the things that they're really emphasizing is nonfiction. So I made a point in this piece to include some nonfiction pieces. And showing kids different formats for writing about things that sort of, like, you know, give them alternatives to just sort of dumping facts from one piece to another. So,
and I want to say something else just as we're winding down here. You know, this is an era. You know, it used to be if you wanted to publish something, you'd have to go through a publisher per se. okay, and work. But now you can refine your writing and get it out there much easier than you used to. It's really a great time to encourage people to write, encourage kids to write.
That's right.
Yeah. If they're willing to put the time in, they can get their stuff out there. You know, they can get their stuff out there.
Yeah,
and
that's
up to
true.
The teachers to inspire them to do that.
Yes, I mean, writing is available to everybody. And the thing is, and I'm speaking to our older, you know, our teachers, writing is something you can do at any point in your life. You don't have to do it when you're 21. You know, writing will wait for you. I mean, one of my favorite books, Cole Sassy Tree by Olive Ann Burns.
Sure,
she wrote
yeah.
the book when she was 65 years old. That was her first book. So
hey,
writing
you
is there whenever
hope.
We're ready
you
for
give
it.
Me hope. Right? I didn't know that. That's really an interesting thing. Now, I just want to say you have a – correct me if I'm wrong here, Ralph, but I think you have a new young adult book out, don't you?
Yes, I
Let's
do.
Just
I have
plug
a book,
that a little bit. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's called also known as Rowan Pohai, and as you know, young adult, I'd probably say seventh grade and up is a good readership for that book. And these three high school boys, they create a fictitious character and apply him to a prestigious prep school. And they're trying to think of his last name, and they decide they're in an IHOP, so they look at, through the glass, and IHOP backwards is Pohai. So they name him Rowan Pohai. They apply him to the school, and they actually get him accepted. And then one of the three boys, unbeknownst to his friends, actually becomes Rowan Pohai and goes to that school and starts a new life.
Oh, wow. Wow, I like it. That's great. I won't even ask if he gets caught at the end. I have to read the book.
Well, the shoe is always, you know, ready to drop, so that's part
exactly.
of the book.
Exactly. And will this be a movie at some point, do you think?
Well, you know, that everybody...
my eyebrows are going up and down here, I think.
You know, I don't know how much time we have, but Larry, I'm just going to leave you with one, like, quick anecdote. Do you have a minute?
Go ahead.
Yeah, well...
Go ahead, absolutely.
Just going back to Mentor Arthur, just for one more thing, I just want to just tell you
sure.
this one little anecdote. I was in a second
sure.
grade class not long ago. And, you know, second graders are about, you know, 7 years old. And this little boy said to me, he said, Mr. Fletcher, we read your book, Twilight Comes Twice. And he smiled and he says, you got beautiful language in that book. He said, you got beautiful language.
Yeah.
And, you know, but it was really an important moment for me because
yeah, it is.
I think the boy was saying to me in his own way, maybe I can't do what you just did, but I can hear it. You know what I mean? I can
wow.
hear what you're doing, and I think that when kids can hear it, they can start to imagine them getting there. And that's what I think the power of a mentor text is. Mentor texts build the roads inside kids that they'll ride on to someday create their own powerful pieces of writing. And it's not going to happen tomorrow. It might not even happen this year. It's a slow growth model. That's one of the things. It's different than math. You know, we test it on Monday, and then we pre-test it on Wednesday, and then we test it on Friday. I think using mentor text is that you may plant a seed that may take some time before it really sprouts in the student and shows evidence in their writing.
Well, you know, actually, then I'm going to ask you one thing. Do you think teachers understand that it is a slower process?
I'm not sure they do. I worry that they don't. And it's not just that they don't, but I think that the whole test culture that we're in right now is,
yeah.
you know, we pre-assess, we assess, and then we show mastery, you know what I mean, or lack of mastery. And I think that sort of, here in the University of New Hampshire, well, I say here because I'm right down the street from it, but
sure.
one of the famous authors up here and teachers was Donald Murray. And,
Don
and Murray, Don
Murray, one of my heroes.
Well, Don Murray, one of my wonderful friends and really a big loss in my life when he passed away a few years ago. But,
yeah,
Don,
his column was one of the best columns we ever read.
Yeah, that's right, the over 60 column, right?
Yeah, that guy, man, he was the best.
He was. He really was, and he just laid it out there. But he once told me, he said, Ralph, I taught a two-semester course on writing, and he said sometimes, and this is college now, this is not fourth grade, this is college, sometimes I'd introduce a strategy in the first semester, and I really wouldn't see the students start using it until the second semester. So it's slow growth. It's like... you know, and I think that what you said is very perceptive. I think that sometimes we're not patient enough, or just maybe that we're in a culture nowadays in schools that we're not allowed to sort of let the learning unfold.
The learning has to that's a great way to leave this. The learning has to unfold, and moving slowly and learning from what a terrific book like yours, Ralph, mentor author, mentor text. I mean, it just makes sense. It just makes sense. You're going
to
come back on, I hope, sometime later this year, right?
And I enjoy talking to you.
I would love to have you. And I know, by the way, as we emailed yesterday, I know you have to be somewhere at 2 o'clock, so that's why I just was going to stop it a little bit early today. But we're doing great, I hope, time-wise?
Yes, absolutely fine. Thank you. Yes.
Okay, great. That's the only reason I was moving to close it a little bit earlier. But we're going to have you on again later in the year.
I look forward to it.
Well, I look forward to it, too, my friend. And you have a great day today. Happy voting. Enjoy yourself.
And if I run into, Ron Paul or, George Romney, I'll say hello from Larry and, just to
hello. When I lived in New Hampshire, we had candidates actually stop at our house to give speeches. And we'd invite a living room group of people. I mean, it really is a great part of democracy, the New Hampshire primary. You're in a great state, my favorite state, quite frankly.
Well, it is true. I remember back in, that was 92, when I was at a friend's house, a neighbor's house, and this young, good-looking guy came in named Bill Clinton, and I looked at my wife and I said, this guy looks like he could become president. I was right, because I just got that. I saw that little glint in him,
And you know what? I'm going to tell you something. Clinton was one of the great consummate politicians. I have friends in New Hampshire. He met them one day, up in Hanover, and six months later when he was running again, they bumped into each other as the primaries were getting, and the guy said, Clinton said, didn't I meet you up in Hanover? That's the memory he had.
He's got that ability, and also the ability to really, when he's talking to you, he's never distracted. He locks into you, and
he locked in. He remembered what the conversation was about.
This is just a random person.
It's amazing, right? So it's just amazing. New Hampshire primary, nothing like it in the universe. I have to say, our guest this morning was from Iowa, home of last week's caucuses. So I'm feeling very political today. Thank you for coming on today, Ralph.
Thank you so much, Larry.
And you'll come back, and you have a great day.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Thanks, Ralph. Ralph Fletcher. He is the author from Heinemann of it's a fun book. I mean, it's just great. Mentor author, mentor texts. Ralph Fletcher, short text, craft notes, and practical classroom uses. Teach writing, and this gives it gives you the examples to use and the thought behind it and the process behind it. And writing's so important, and I just can't say enough. You can learn more at ralphfletcher.com if you want to go to Ralph's website. Of course, you can also go to heinemann.com, heinemann.com. At Heinemann, we were actually talking about this, Ralph and I. If you go to Ralph's site to learn all about Ralph, but if you go to the Heinemann site, you don't only see Ralph, but you see all the other authors that are available to you through Heinemann. They are a company that is dedicated to teachers, heinemann, two N's at the end, .com. I'll just say they're the best in educational publishing, professional development. I hope you go over there, check it out. They are a company that is dedicated to teachers, a full-service educational publisher and provider of wonderful teacher professional development. Ralph, thanks a million, and I'm serious. I want you to come back on again later in the year. This is Larry Jacobs. I appreciate Ralph being on. I appreciate Heinemann for introducing me to him. The show will be archived at education-talkradio.org. Thank you for listening, and have a great day. Bye-bye.